discovery of London. That's London Walks Distilled. London Walks makes the new familiar, and the familiar new. That's London Walks opened out like the petals of a rose. This is the London Walks podcast. Sure enough, it's a discovery of London that makes the new familiar and the familiar new. Like London Walks, the podcast is a potpourri and a many-stringed instrument. Every day, there's a Today in London History Bulletin. Friday's a doubleheader, the London History Bulletin and the weekly podcast. Everything from interviews to readings by the two London Walks guides who are professional narrators, to Helena Jones's brilliant analyses of famous paintings, to extracts from London Walks tours, to retrospectives and look-aheads. All done to the London Walks gold standard. Take you places you wouldn't have found off your own bat, show you things you wouldn't have seen, tell you things you didn't know. Make the new familiar and the familiar new. Change the way you see London. Okay, that's the ringing of the tocsin and the writing on the greeting card. Let's see what's in the box today. London Calling.
What's in the box today is Manisha, serving up dish after dish of historical delights, culinary and cultural. Anglo-Indian historical delights, culinary and cultural. Origins, modifications, who's and where's and when's and how's and why's. Everything from kedgeree to curry powder to the famous Indian head massage and shampoo. This is a brief extract from the early stages of Manisha's fascinating virtual tour, How the British Fell in Love with Curry, which will run again later this spring on Saturday, May 14th. Manisha's the dream guide for this tour. She's a cultural and culinary historian, has written 16 cookbooks, appears on television cookery shows, grew up in India and goes back often to stay in touch, but has lived in this country for many years, and has all the intangibles you want in a guide. She's warm, fun, friendly, thoughtful, outgoing, interested in people, in love with her subject. Here's Manisha. Here's the promised taster.
Women played a big part in popularizing Indian food in Britain. English wives who were stationed in India got recipes from their Indian cooks and sent them home to sisters, mothers, and aunts. Emma Roberts was one such lady who contributed to a successful book, A New System of Domestic Cookery, which was written in 1806. The book was written by a lady called Mrs. Rundle, who has been referred to as the original domestic goddess. Her book, in fact, had 67 editions. But when you read these recipes, sometimes you can tell that they're a curious combination of the local cuisine combined with European techniques. So European techniques and Indian recipes. This can be seen in Mrs. Beaton's famous book, The Book of Household Management. Maybe some of you have heard of Mrs. Beaton and her work. She first published in 1861 her recipe for breakfast, kedgeree. Now in the UK, kedgeree is something that is served for breakfast. It's got fish and eggs and rice, of course. But it's based on a very traditional Indian dish called khichdi, which is a mixture of rice and lentils and spices. And it's really eaten when one is feeling poorly. And you need some sustenance, and the spices and the rice, it's all comforting. It's not got any fish or eggs in it. But obviously, when it came to Britain, a vegetarian dish would have been meaningless at the time. And therefore, it got the additions of the fish, which now are the norm. Then we come to the ingredients. So although recipes were becoming popular, they were not the right ingredients were not popular. So here you see, we've got substitutes. So if a recipe had tamarind, which is the brown-colored pod you see, it would be substituted with lemon. If a recipe needed a green mango, then a green apple was used. And the mortar and pestle, which was such a popular thing in an Indian kitchen, which gave rise to the curry paste, etc., because that was unheard of. Sauces and curries were thickened with flour, as you would in French cooking, and you'd make a roux. Of course, that was not part of Indian cooking, but even today, when you see some recipes that are written by non-native food writers, you see these techniques still being used. You may find flour in a recipe or eggs to thicken a certain kind of batter, which is not the way it would be in India. And then, of course, we have the arrival of curry powder. Now, this is 2022, and yet we find, of course, that many people still use curry powder, and it's still very much available. But in the mid-1800s, Indian products, lots of Indian products, were available and on sale in England, and some spice sellers presented these as health foods. So here, the first commercial curry powder appeared in Britain in the mid-1780s. And in 1784, you can see this, it was advertised as being pleasant and healthful. It renders the stomach active in digestion, the blood naturally free in circulation. This advertisement is in the archives of the British Library here in London. But it also, the way it is presented, that spices are now associated with good health, and everyone should be using them for that. In India, of course, the grinding stone was producing fresh ground spices and curry paste. But in England, curry powder was a quick and necessary substitute. Also, wherever the British went, they took with them curry powder, or wherever they had colonies and Indian people were taken for working in plantations or on railways, etc., curry powder went, and therefore you see it in the cuisines of so many countries in the world. You see it in the Caribbean, you see it in Fiji, in South Africa, you see it in so many places. Even to this day, curry powder is a popular part of the Indian kitchen. So in 1888, Sharwoods established themselves as grocers in the city of London, and legend has it that a family friend introduced Mr. Sharwood to Lord Dufferin, who was the Viceroy of India at the time. Dufferin asked Sharwood to bring supplies from Europe to his friend chef in India, and the grateful chef was so pleased with all the supplies that came from Europe that he suggested Sharwood visit the spice merchant Venkatachalam in Madras. They were making a curry powder with turmeric, coriander, and secret ingredients, and they were already exporting this. Sharwood was so impressed that he decided to import the spice blend back to England and distribute it as Venkat curry powder. This term, Madras curry, was probably created where the blend was created rather than a measure of heat. So here you see on the bottom left, that's Fort George, which is in Madras and which was one of the strongholds of the British in India. They had their bases in Madras, in Bombay, we've just seen Bombay, and in Calcutta. And in Madras, the south is where a lot of spices grow in India. So the spice blends, etc., are quite powerful. They're quite unique. And you can see here that on the left, that's actually my spice tin, which I use. And a combination of all of that would have been in this blue box and many more spices, I imagine, which became Venkat curry powder. So what about the first commercially sold curry in Britain? Some sources say that curry first appeared on the menus of restaurants such as the Coffee House in Norris Street in Haymarket in 1773. The mistress of Norris Street Coffee House declared in a newspaper that she not only sold true Indian curry, but would also, at the shortest notice, send ready-dressed curry and rice and Indian pulaos to any part of town. And when I read this, I thought this was possibly Britain's first Indian home delivery service and takeaway, I suppose, also. The green plaque on the wall of number 102 George Street, London, informs passers-by that it was the site of the Hindustani Coffee House. As the British were now somewhat familiar with curry, Sheikh Deen Mohammed, whose photo is on the right, an enterprising barber, decided to open a curry house, the first one to be run in England by an Indian person. He had joined the East India Company at the age of 11, and he rose to become a captain, fighting in a number of campaigns, and then moved to Britain. He soon moved to Portman Square, where he became assistant to a gentleman called Sir Basil Cochrane. Now, Basil Cochrane was an entrepreneur, and his bath, he had vapor bath in London, where Dean Mohammed joined, and he introduced there the Indian head massage. Today, the Indian head massage is so popular all over the West, but this is a gentleman who brought it from India to the UK first. And in India, the word for the head massage is champi. So that word was introduced into English and it became shampoo. So the word shampoo is now, although comes from champi, we all know the word shampoo, and it can be credited to this gentleman on the right who introduced it to Britain. Coming back to his food history, is in 1810, he opened the Hindustan Coffee House, which served Indian dishes and also had the hookah, or the Hubble Bubble, I think it's called. Unfortunately, he went bankrupt a few years later because probably the people that he was trying to sell his Indian food already had Indian cooks at home. So he moved to Brighton and opened baths along the seafront at East Cliff. But he's certainly the person who is credited with being the first Indian person to open an Indian restaurant. This is an example of what his restaurant sold. So it looks like it's quite expensive, and people would have found that in those days that was probably too expensive to have. But some of the dishes you would think are similar to what we would have now. So a pulao rice and a curry is something that a restaurant have even today. We come to more recent history now.